Welcome to the Beekeeper's Corner Podcast.
May 18th, 2014. This is episode 57. Two steps forward, one step back. Welcome everybody to the Beekeeper's Corner Podcast. This is a combination video audio version. And I want to welcome in Bob Kloss. He's come to join me again. Good to have you, Bob.
Yeah, thanks, Kevin.
We had a good time playing with this last time, and I have to say that every time we do this, it becomes a real complicated mess to get set up. I don't know why that's such a pain, but anyway, we have a lot to talk about. You and I, we've had a busy week. If not a couple weeks.
Yeah, it's been pretty strange coming out of what was an unusual winter, and the spring hasn't been any better, really, has it?
No, it was really, really cold, and then all of a sudden we got a break in the weather, and now it's game on all the way through.
Yeah, I think the swarm season is definitely upon us.
So in my last episode, I talked about the event we had at the Mentoring Hives, where we went through and made a couple nukes and did Earth Day. And lately, those hives have been doing really well. I went in last week and checked them, and all three of them had queens emerged. And somebody pointed out something really smart to me. I don't know why I didn't pick this up. So we were on a Saturday, I want to say it was three Saturdays ago, and last weekend I went to look at them on Sunday, and figuring, you know, it would have been 16 days till the queen emerged, but they were 2 days old, and when I got there, they were all emerged. Did you know that?
You know, you told me that, and I guess, you know, I've been reading a little bit more on that. I think the temperature has something to do with it. It wasn't really that warm, but what I've been reading, I think it was Michael Bush actually that said it, was that if the temperature is a little bit warmer than normal, yeah, that sometimes they'll hatch earlier. But I was surprised when you told me that.
I didn't know that. And, you know, I was counting on them being there. I wanted to harvest the queen cells and didn't get a chance to do it. What I thought was really neat was they were all torn down. I don't know if I showed you that picture. I have a before and after picture where all the queen cells were ripe and beautiful looking, and then the next one, I found the queen where she had emerged. It had that little flap on it, so she must have just came out, and the other ones had holes through them.
Wow. So, well, what do you think? She must have gone around, right, and killed the other ones?
Either that or the other bees in there tore them down.
Yeah, I don't know. That's odd. But you said it had a hole in the side. That would indicate to me that it probably was the queen. But you're also saying that they tore the entire cell down?
They tore the entire cell down. It looked like somebody just chewed a hole through both sides, and you could literally look right through the queen cell.
Wow. That's odd, isn't it? That wouldn't be something that I would have expected.
Yeah. Well, you know, we've had a very busy day today, both you and I. I got a phone call from you earlier today, and you were vacuuming a swarm.
Yeah, so let's tell the local hive report here at 61 Lazy Brook Road. So I went into my top bar hive that I have out on my patio last week, and I saw swarm cells. So I took about half of them. I took five swarm cells. I took a couple of frames of brood and some honey and some pollen out of my other hives, and I made up five nukes, and I put swarm cells in them. There still were at least another five.
I turned the video. I'm showing the video up on the screen of your log that you shot. So go ahead. I put it on mute.
So I knew that my top bar was going to swarm. So my wife was outside. Kathy says to me, "Oh, look at your bees. I think your bees are swarming." So I go out, and I'm watching them, and then I thought, you know what? Kevin's going to kill me if I don't take some video.
Yeah, you gotta shoot the video.
So I grabbed the camera and I went out, and it was really a lot of fun. You know, the bees were out. I'm standing there shooting the bees leaving the hive, and I'm completely engulfed in this ball of bees. So I'm just waiting, say, okay, where are they going to go? So I turned around, and I thought they were going to land on this little oak tree that I have in the back of my house. But in fact, they made it easier for me. They landed, as you can see right there, they landed on this dead branch that had fallen down from a willow tree that I have in the back. So I just watched them, and little by little, they just started to accumulate on the end of this this log. So it gave me an opportunity to go in and get my bee back, which I've made, but I've never really used. And I took it out there, and I'll tell you what, it was a lot of fun to watch them land. The BVAC made it incredibly easy to collect them. I think I sucked them all up in about 5 minutes. There were very few, if any, fatalities. And then by the time you got there, and we'll see, we can see some of that later, but by the time you got there, I was ready to put them in the hive.
That's pretty cool. I'm just living vicariously through you. I was happy that you got to use your BVAC from the gadget garage that we made. And we see in this video you're shaking the bees down and putting the screen top on. That's a format you were in when I got there. And it looks like it worked out really, really well.
I mean, I don't think it could have gone any better, Kevin. It was so easy. I watched them. I watched the swarm and the cluster form. I went down. I just sucked them off. There you are.
That's so funny. I make my appearance in the video.
Yeah.
Ever trusted camera.
So this was the time we were getting ready to put them in into the hive. This is another great shot. This was when, after I had dumped them in, and we just watched them, they just were in mass going up onto the comb. Now, we had primed that comb with a little bit of sugar water, but it was pretty clear that they knew exactly what it was, and they knew it was home, and they just went right for it. So what was really surprising, not surprising to me, but I thought what was a little bit unusual is very few of the bees were flying. I mean, once I wet them with a little bit of sugar water and I dumped them in there, they saw the dark comb that was in there, and I think they said, well, this is home. Let's stay. So I had very few stragglers.
Yeah, that was great. We literally watched them walk across the floor and right up onto the face of the comb, and I'm betting the queen was in there somewhere in that mix that walked up, and as you here in the video are putting in some additional drawn comb for them to work with, they're probably nestled right in there tonight.
Yeah, so as I told you when I narrated the video, I was just going to fill it with drawn comb, and then I thought, you know, this is a swarm. They're ready to make some nice white wax for me. So I put four frames that had some nice drawn comb in the center for the brood nest, but then I also put in some partially drawn frames as well as some empty frames. I thought, well, let's let them draw some nice white wax for me, because I have a lot of dark old comb that I'd like to get rid of. So any opportunity to get them to draw some new wax, I took advantage of it.
Yeah, you know, so talking about swarms, last week I went and picked up a swarm. Jim McCauley, one of our members, had a swarm out of one of his hives, and it was hanging on a fence in his yard, and Jim was in Tennessee, so I went over and picked it up, and he has as many hives as he wants, so I was able to bring that home. I went over to visit Charlie Ilsley at his house on Saturday, and we shot a number of videos and pulled a couple packages. His hives look spectacular, Bob. I couldn't tell you. He had 15 hives on his property, and every one of them just, it had to be three deeps plus a couple honey supers. And they were just loaded with bees, loaded frame after frame after frame of brood. It was amazing how good his hives look.
I remember you telling me that you had one hive that you saw that had, what, 15? 15 frames of brood in it.
Yeah.
That's just incredible. I mean, talk about a strong hive.
And we shot a walkaway split from that, and it we shot a video of a walkaway split, and I pulled that video out and took a look at it, and we had a funny moment there where both of us said, "You just walk away," and we both did. Both our arms went up, like, you know, just step back kind of motion. It was very comical. If you want to see the video, you can go to the Northwest New Jersey Beekeepers Association YouTube page. It's youtube.com/NWNJBA. And I have to tell you, Bob, I've been posting videos up there like a fiend.
Yeah, you know, I saw a couple of them last week. I especially liked the one where the bees were pinging off your veil, because it's been really an interesting year. I've been following the Yahoo group and lots of folks talking about how the ladies just seem to be a little bit angry this year. And I didn't think too much of it, but I found the same thing. I was actually stung last week mowing the lawn. I was a good 30 feet from the hives, and this bee came out of nowhere and just let me have it. So it's strange. They're really a little aggressive this year, and I'm not sure why.
Yeah, I don't know why that is, but I've been stung every time. We went to the plant swap at our local municipality, and I walked over to Macaulay's yard, and I was standing there taking a picture, and I got stung in the eye. I went to your house today. We were standing there looking at your top bar. I got stung in the ear, right on the little tab of my right ear. And let me tell you, I left your house, and that was the most painful sting I think I've ever been through. It's as bad as getting stung on the nostril.
Yeah, I don't know. They're awfully angry this year for some reason. You know, you mentioned the swarm that you got from Jim's house. So I did get a chance last week to watch that on the YouTube channel, and I thought, how much easier could it have been for you to capture that swarm, right? And then I had the one today, and I thought, you know what? I think I beat you, Kevin. I think mine was easier.
Yeah, that was great. I literally was able to roll it up, and I'll tell you, that video is worth watching. It was so cool that you watched the video. So the premise of it was I rolled the hive up on a wagon up against the fence, and I knocked the bees in, and the queen was inside, and they were all scenting. And the bees literally were doing the march of the ants kind of thing, just straight down the pole and onto the inner cover. And I pulled the inner cover out, and they went right in the hive, and it was really, really cool.
You know, that was the first thing I noticed. They were just marching. It was incredible. I've never seen anything like that. And it's almost like, okay, hey, this is where it is. And they all just came right down and went in. Couldn't have been much easier.
Yes, yeah, so in the local hive report, we were talking about the various hives and what I have going on. And I have posted a Brand Hollow apiary inspection. And in that, I literally went through all the hives sitting outside. So let me think about this. I have four hives. Two of them are splits. Two were walkaway splits where I pulled a hive. One of the walkaway splits had a queen. The other one has to raise its own. And then we have the three nukes from the mentoring hives, which we went through. And one of the things you and I were talking about this week was the runty queens for two of them.
Yeah, you know, when you mentioned that to me, that two of them were pretty runty and one was looked pretty good. So I went out, of course, I Googled it. I started Googling runty queens, because the first thing I thought of was, well, what about if you've got a small cell queen? Is she actually smaller than a normal queen? So I Googled it. I didn't come up with much, but when I put in runty queen, there was a lot of discussion back and forth on BeeSource and a couple of the other websites. And depending on who you ask, I mean, everybody wants to see big, fat, plump queens. But there was a number of comments from different people, including Michael Palmer was the one that I remember, where he said, you know, the size really doesn't matter that much. Sometimes you get a runty queen and she's really good once you get her into a production colony, or sometimes you've got a nice big fat queen and you put her into a production colony and she doesn't do that well. I mean, I think at the end of the day, I'd much rather have a nice, plump, well-mated queen than a runty queen. But I guess I wouldn't pinch off a runt either. You know, I have a problem with pinching queens anyway.
Somebody sent me an email saying you could take it and pinch it off and make a lure out of it. Use it as a lure. And I'm telling you, this, the one queen that I saw was so small, it might have been as like a quarter inch bigger than a regular bee. It was really tiny. And
you know, I've been reading a lot about these runty queens, and one of the things they say is before they're mated, when they're virgin queens, they really are not much bigger than a worker bee. So, you know, maybe just be that they weren't mated yet, or again, they could be runty queens. Who knows?
Oh, that's interesting. You know, I did wonder if they were going to grow anything, but you would think when it emerges, it would be out the size it would be. There's the queen right there in the video.
Oh, yeah.
One of them. There's the queen cell that came out. This might actually show. Yeah, look at the one next to it. Let me pause that video. Bring it back and see if I can get it. You could see the literal hole torn out of this one right here, if you see it.
Yeah, and actually the other shot that you showed, it looked like it went right from one side through down to the other side.
Yeah. Just
straight through, almost like a bullet.
It's a huge hole in the side, and the whole side of the queen cell was torn out. So it's crazy what they did to it.
Yeah.
Oh, there goes Internet Explorer.
Now, you know, I think any time you can try to raise three queens and you get all three of them, I think you've done pretty well. So, you know, I'll give you my local hive report, and you know this already, but, you know, I had a pretty tough winter as well. I had about a 50% loss. I lost my biggest, strongest colonies, my three deep colonies. I lost both of them. But what was surprising is I wintered over five nukes, and four of those five were just five frames. And I put them all together, put a little insulation around them, trying to, you know, help them use each other's heat. And four out of the five came through the winter, so that was all I had. I had that and, of course, the Old Faithful top bar on the back patio. But they didn't come through, you know, particularly strong. They didn't look like Michael Palmer's nukes do, where they're just busting out come spring. But I did get them into deep boxes, and it looks like they're doing okay now. You know, just in general, you know, it was a tough winter. It was a very difficult winter in New Jersey, much colder than normal. And, you know, I didn't fare very well. I knew I wasn't going to. But I've taken whatever I had coming out of the winter, and I've just split. So yeah. I mentioned that I took the five queen cells out of my top bar last week, and you know I just basically pulled one frame of brood and a frame of honey and a couple of empties to make the nukes that I have out there. So I'm assuming that by now those queens have hatched, and I'm hoping for some good weather this week so they can all get properly mated. But, you know, I'm back up to 10 hives, but none of them is really what I would consider very strong.
So you and I talked, we're going to, I'm going to take the hives that came from the mentoring yard and bring them back next week for a meeting that we have, and we're going to take them out of the nukes and put them into full-size hives, and that'd be a pretty cool thing for people to see because they watched us make those splits, and now they'll be able to see the fruition and see the queens. So we'll be able to dig in and find out what those runty queens look like now that, you know, now that they've had a little bit of time. I would imagine they've been out and mated, but you know what? I have to think that they're going to be the size they were when they emerged.
Well, I guess we'll see. And we'll see how productive they are, right? At the end of the day, that's all that matters. What kind of a pattern are you getting out of them? Now, we talked a little bit about what a strange year it's been, but what about when we went up to those mentoring hives on April 26th, I think it was, a Saturday?
Yeah.
Remember all the drone brood that was in there? You know, frames that had a little patch of worker brood, and then they had these patches. There was not a single, well, maybe there was one frame, but there was not a lot of frames that just had worker brood on it. It seemed to be partially worker and partially drone. And it really surprised me at how much drone brood was in there.
So you could see the look on my face. You know what I'm going to say, right? Remember that conversation we were having at the team meeting? When was that? In March, about whether or not the timing was right, right? So we were having a discussion about making splits early on those hives, and if we had made the splits early, could we do it and time it so that when the queen emerges 14 days later, there would be drones all over the place, and we'd give that hive the earliest start it could get. Remember that conversation we had?
Not at all, Kevin. I can't remember it at all. we had some pretty good back and forth. I was, as much as I wanted to make those splits early, I was very concerned that there would be no drones around or not enough drones, and we wouldn't get a well-mated queen. But, you know, to your point, I actually marked that date on my calendar that we saw drone brood on the 26th. I went back a week later, and that hive was full of drones. So by, you know, early May, 1st of May, there were drones out there. So I have to say, you were right.
I was close. I'll tell you what, it was cutting edge close. That's how close it was. But, you know, had we, I want to say, a lot of those drones that we saw come out of there, Bob, were brand new. I mean, brand new. They were fuzzy little chicken new. They were that new, you know.
Yeah. So I, you know, to your point, I think that's probably about as early as we could have done it. But I guess at the end of the day, we could have done it. And I was very surprised. I didn't think there would be enough drones around, but you were right. Okay, you were right.
Well, that wasn't what I was after. The one thing we were trying to do is just catch our notes as to, you know, we had said about March 15th being the date, Bob, that we were going to possibly target in the future for adding additional boxes, right?
Yeah.
And we had a funny year. We were delayed this year. And I think, what did we say, April 26th was the date of that meeting. We actually were supposed to meet the week before, if you remember, and it got postponed.
Yeah, that's right.
And that was the weekend that we were going to do splits, and we were wondering if we should have done it prior to that. Whatever, it's just one of those things that you could write the notes on. I don't know if we'd have got there a week earlier if any of those drones would have emerged. We would have seen tons of drone frame, but maybe not. I don't know.
Well, you know, Kevin, it goes to what we've been talking about is the season is much earlier than we originally thought, right? There's a lot going on from March 15th on. I actually went up to those mentoring hives, the mentoring hive, we only have one, and I actually checkerboarded that hive on March 15th. And you saw when we went up there, they were already up in the third box.
Right.
So the season is a lot earlier than we, that at least I originally thought, and the flow is a lot earlier than I thought too. There's pollen and there's nectar out there pretty early in the year. They find it. There's not a lot, but whatever's out there, they can find it.
So one of the things we talked about too was the fact that we're looking at different markers for the year in order to check and see when swarms are going to come and things like that. And the first sight of a drone should be a new benchmark that we use in order to figure out when the swarm season is coming, right? Because you can't, a natural hive will not swarm without drones. And that drone has to be a predecessor to a potential swarm date.
So we can memorialize the date for this year. So on April 26th, we saw capped drones in that mentoring hive, and I went up there a week later on Saturday, May 3rd, and that hive was full of drones.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I wrote that down just to make sure, but that was a lot earlier than I thought.
So I actually had this set up for segment number two, revisiting this early start, and I wanted to go to segment number one for the podcast, which was Queen Acceptance. I got a message, an email from Chuck Zump from Nevada. He's apparently from the high desert area region there, and I wanted to say thanks to him for writing in. He was saying that their beekeeping season is underway, and they've collected a couple swarms, and it sounds like they did okay getting through the winter. One of the questions he wanted to ask to see if we could explore was about queen acceptance, and that they had some problems in the past with putting new queens in and having them be accepted. Do you have any thoughts on that, Bob?
I do, and I, you know, if you read Brother Adam, right? Brother Adam said that if you have a laying queen, you can pretty much pick her up and put her in any hive, and she'll be accepted. So yeah. I think the issue is when you get these queens and they're coming up in a package from the south, they haven't been laying for a couple of weeks, and it does take some time for them to be accepted by the workers. And think about it, in a package, all of those bees are coming from different hives, right? The queen hasn't been laying for a while. And I think, you know, to direct release a queen that comes from one of those packages is risky. But based on what I heard from Brother Adam, I would take a laying queen and I would put her in any hive, and I think she would be accepted immediately.
I've heard Michael Palmer talk on that specific topic, and in fact, I've seen him in a video literally pull a queen out, I think, and walk over and put it in a hive. But, you know, one of the things about that is if you have a queen cage, for example, and you're going to put that in a hive, I'm wondering if you look to see whether or not that queen is going to be accepted. And maybe the better way to do it is to reverse engineer it. Maybe you pull a couple frames of brood and no queen, and you put them in a nuke first, and you put the queen in there and let the queen get in that. The other queen is hiveless or queenless, and maybe overnight, right, because you've, wait, let me say this over again. You had a hive that had no queen, right?
Okay.
You pull two frames out, and you bring them into a nuke box, and you insert the queen. And they'll accept that queen because they have none. Then you take those two frames that have already got their scent on it, and you put it back in the mother hive. What do you think of that idea? Do you think that would work? Because maybe she's going to lay, or maybe they'll have picked up her scent and passed it around those two frames. And then if you put those two frames back in the hive, maybe that would be a better way to introduce her?
I like that idea, because what you've basically done is you've recruited those nurse bees to be loyal to that queen, right? So now she's got a loyal workforce that's surrounding her, i.e. protecting her. So, yes, I think that's a much better way than just putting her directly into a new hive where they really aren't used to her yet.
So they had talked about, in his email, he sent something about Caspian apiaries and the Caspian solution, which the solution apparently is a mix of royal jelly, pheromones, and some sort of bee pollen. Hmm. And I only had a short time period to go look at this, and I found the website for it, but didn't get to read about it. But basically, you buy this solution. It's $1 a liter, and you mix it in with, it's like a powdered solution, and you mix it in with water and other ingredients. And I think what I read on here, don't quote me on this because I'm not sure 100%, but there's all kinds of stuff on here about artificial queen insemination, mating, things like that, and in prevention of American fowl brood. And this Caspian Apiaries, it's caspianapiaries.com, had information about this solution. And apparently, this solution can be used to help with queen acceptance. So, you know, one of the things I was thinking about, Bob, is if you do grafting of queens, and you want them readily accepted, one of the things you do is feed the colony. I think that's another thing you could do when you're introducing a queen, is feed them, make them really happy, and give them something to work on.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about this a little bit, Kevin, but, you know, the flow really helps a lot. You know, trying to raise a queen or trying to get a queen introduced when there's no flow on is a lot more difficult than this time of year when they're just looking to take off. And I think you're right. I think this is the time, so let's do it. That's interesting. I'm surprised. I really have never heard about that. What is it called? Caspian?
Caspian, yeah.
Yeah. I've never heard of that.
I'll provide a link to this in the show notes, and I'm going to do a little more homework on it and see what it's about. I went and read the About page on this, and it had information about the person behind it and their history with beekeeping. It sounds like it's a single person, you know, much the way, say, Honeybee Healthy or some of those things got established. It's something like that, you know?
Yeah, well, and, you know, it's all about the pheromones, right, or smells anyway. The bees are much more sensitive to those kind of indicators than obviously we are. And I think anything that's got some sort of a distinctive odor, I mean, you can understand why that works with bees, right?
Yeah. You know, I wanted to go on to the next topic, and it had to do with something said in from a listener. His name is Adam Hickman. He was interested in hearing the thoughts of using a nuke as an auxiliary to supplement the full-size hives. And you and I, we've talked about this quite a bit at times, of the things you could do with it. And one of the questions he had specifically was, how do you keep it from swarming?
Well, again, so you know that Michael Palmer is really big on having these nukes. And to your first point, one of the things that he says you can do with them is, you know, you basically make bee bombs. So you take a frame of capped brood, right, that's got capped brood on both sides. You put that into a hive, within a couple of weeks, that hive just explodes with bees. But the downside is, you need to prevent swarming. You need to keep an eye on them, or your nukes are going to swarm. So I think it's as simple as that, making sure that you're in there to understand what's going on and using them to bulk up your good big production hives. But I love this idea of these bee bombs. I just wish I had more brood coming from my nukes right now so that I could beef up some of my my production colonies.
You asked me today about the nukes that we brought home from the mentoring yards, whether I put them in full-size boxes, and I haven't yet. But one of the ways that I'm trying to keep them at bay, because I'm sure they're growing, is I put a second nuke box on top, right? And if you think about the utility of these things, there's no wrong answer. You can create more comb. So I have a top bar hive that I'm going to press into service now that I have some bees. And I want them to build that out. So I'm going to start exchanging top bar hive. You know what I have, Bob, the foundationless ones. I'm going to start putting them in there and have them build out. I have two of them built now. And when I put a package of bees in there, they'll have some comb to work with. You could raise queens in those. You can, as you just said, pull brood out and add additional bees to a colony when they are not doing well, or you want to get into the forage season like we are now. There's a lot of things you could do with them. I guess the one thing you have to be careful is you have to monitor them, because if they're going to swarm, you need to make sure that you're keeping an eye on them. They will get there quickly because of how prolific they are.
Yeah. But the other thing about them, Kevin, is sometimes, you know, that I've been foundationless for a couple of years now, and sometimes when you try to get the bees to draw foundationless, they'll draw out a lot of drone comb. And, you know, that's great for storing honey, but it's really not what you're looking for. what I found with nukes, and I think Mike Palmer confirmed this, is the nukes will draw very little drone comb. They're really drawing out that worker comb. So it's a great way to supply some of your other hives with nice new worker comb.
Yeah.
But it is a problem with foundationless. The first couple frames they draw out are almost always drone comb. So the nukes really help you there.
Yeah. You know, I'm all over the place today, but that's okay. I had a thought. Did you see the video I sent you about the queen marking system that you have with the tube and the plunger?
Yes.
The video where you make that out of a medication bottle.
Yes.
That's something for the gadget garage. That was pretty cool, right?
It was pretty cool. Although, I have to tell you, Kevin, I'm trying to graduate from that. I want to be able to mark the queen just by picking her up barehanded. Like Michael Palmer says, she's got a handle right there. Just grab hold of her and get there where I don't need another contraption. But, I love the gadgets.
I was in my hives last weekend, and I was thinking about picking the queen. I don't have anything to mark with now, so that's one of the things I have to do. I was thinking about picking up a couple drones just to get the practice, but then I remembered, get in and get out. Stop messing around. Your hives are wide open and exposed to the,
I'll tell you, there is an incredible video that Michael Palmer has out there where he picks the queen up by its wings. He says the handles, right? He picks it up by the handles with one hand, and then he takes his forefinger and his thumb from the other hand, and he holds it by her head and her thorax. The idea is that he's not touching her abdomen at all. There's absolutely no way that he's injuring her abdomen. But to see him hold this queen bee by her head and her thorax, it's just incredible. And then it's so much easier to mark her. But if you think about it, what's the most important part of the queen? It's her abdomen, right, where she's got her spermatheca, and that's her reproductive apparatus. So the last thing you want to do is be giving her a little squeeze down there.
Yep. Yeah, no doubt. Hey, wanted to share this picture here. This is my weekend project. So I've been working on that styrofoam hive that I bought. It has markings on it from Finland. It comes from Europe. I got it painted and I got it built, and I was starting to count the number of frames that I have to order. I have about 7 or 8 medium-sized hives that don't have any frames in them that I have to reorder, and I have 4 deeps, and I'm out of boxes. You and I were joking this afternoon about we're out of equipment. I got to get this stuff deployed.
Yeah. I'll tell you, that styrofoam hive looks really good. So it looks like you've got 2 deeps there and 2 mediums on it, right?
Yep, that's the way it works.
And is there an inner cover with that?
There's no inner cover. That cover sits right on top of it, which I thought was really weird. But, no inner cover.
Interesting to see if they're going to glue that down, how hard it'll be to get it off.
One of the things I read about these hives is they don't propolize the styrofoam at all.
Really?
They don't propolize it closed like you would think. You don't have to pry the boxes open.
So I look at that 2 ways, I think. First of all, so it makes it easier. They're not all glued together. But what about for wintering them over? You would think it would be drafty.
I guess it's made up by the fact that it's styrofoam and it maintains the heat. They're pretty well sealed. What you can't tell there is they're ridged on the inside, and they kind of interlock together when they come through. You couldn't take it and slide the boxes. It's not a flat top. It's almost like a tongue and groove kind of system. And the thing that I don't have on that bottom cover, where the entrance is, there's a plastic piece that slides down, and you could literally slide it closed. The other feature about this hive is that top cover. Think about it. When it's wintertime, you want it closed up. When it's summertime, it could get really, really hot in there. that cover flips over, and that whole channel that's in the top is capable of venting the hive.
Yeah, I see that. I can also see what you were talking about, how they're kind of rippled and they fit together. If you look between the second deep and the first medium, you can kind of see where they're kind of fit together like a tongue and groove almost.
Yeah, so I painted this with masonry paint called Drylock, the stuff you would use to paint a basement to keep water from seeping through the walls.
Oh, yeah,
and
I know.
It's got like a texture on it.
Mm-hmm. That looks
good. It was kind of a...
I'm sorry.
It was a pain to paint it. It wasn't very, very easy to paint with that paint. I think if you sprayed these, they'd be a lot easier. But to put them together couldn't have been any easier. You just basically push the tenons into the side, and I assembled this thing in 15 minutes, like pushed it together. Those plastic sleeves just slide. The yellow parts are plastic sleeves.
Yeah.
And they're hard. And that's what the frame rests on. So if you're using your hive tool, you're not prying against them.
Okay. Just to be clear, too, this is not, when we say a styrofoam hive, this is not the soft styrofoam that we're used to having, you know, one of these styrofoam coolers. This is a lot more rigid than that, isn't it?
Yeah, when you look at the picture here, it has a lot of texture. That's really from the paint. They're very hard and smooth. And if you took your fingernail and you moved it really hard against it, you might be able to leave a mark, but for the most part, they don't squeeze or pinch. They're really stiff on the outside, almost like a plastic coating.
I'd be really curious. I think with that coat of paint on the outside, they probably last for a long time.
They say you only have to paint them once, and they'll last for 30 years.
Wow.
Without having to paint them again.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the main advantage when I think about a styrofoam hive is just that insulation and maintaining, you know, the heat in the winter and cool in the summer, just not having those drastic changes.
Yeah. Well, the way I look at it is I'm finally getting to that fruition that I was looking for. The only thing I didn't get built was my Ware A hive, but I got this hive. My top bar I'm ready to put in. I have my mediums, all medium stack. And I tell you, I think I'm really going to enjoy that. And if I were going to start today, I would start with all mediums. I would go that route. I would not buy deeps. I think that's what I would do.
Yeah, you know, I heard that early on from Michael Bush. He said, go all mediums, go all mediums. But I don't know. I just went the traditional way. And I think I'm with you. I think that's the way to go just because they're so interchangeable.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's a lot to that, no doubt.
Well, you know, I'm not the biggest guy in the world, so it's really a struggle for me when I've got a deep that's full of honey for me to lift that thing off. And I think anything that would help with that would be useful.
I know that when I was at Charlie's last week looking at his 15 hives, I'm thinking to myself, wow, that's a lot of work. And he had additional equipment all over the place to support his stuff. He had boxes laying all over his yard and honey boxes and all this stuff prepared. And I have to think that that's a lot of work.
Well, you know, I have, my grandfather was a beekeeper. I think I told you this back in the 60s when it was a little bit easier than it was now. But I have some pictures from him, and he ran all deeps. Even his honey supers were deeps.
Wow.
Can you imagine what that weighed? I mean, I don't know how he did it, but he did. The other thing is Dee Lusby does the same thing. She runs those highs with five deeps, even with her honey supers. I just don't know how you handle something like that.
You see some of those tower hives that people have. They're all that way, too. You know what I mean? One of the things that I had in my garage is a shallow box, a really small one. I'm getting rid of it. It's like an orphan. It's the only one I have. It has a bunch of frames with no foundation. It's got that, I don't know what it's called, the foundation that had the plastic sheet with the wax on it.
Yeah, yeah.
That tells you how old it is.
I think it's called
my mother-in-law.
Yeah.
What's it called?
Yeah, shallow. You know, I wanted to say it was Plastisil, but it's not. It's not. I'm thinking of something else. But you're right. I haven't seen shallows around at all. We have a few in the mentoring hives that were donated to us. I think medium is the way to go, though.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. You know, the one thing, it sticks to me that, who was it? It was Tim Ives that said it when we went to see him that one time. He talked about the square footage that you lose. I think it was Tim that was talking about that.
Yeah.
You know, when you have a deep, you have more comb space. And when you have a medium, you have comb and a bar and a top bar. Comb, yeah. A bar, and a top bar. And you tend to lose more B space inside the box.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard some things also about winter clustering where, you know, they have to fill that gap between the more gaps between the medium frames than they would with the deep frames. I think if you have a strong hive, it really doesn't matter.
Yeah. So we have a meeting coming up, and you and I were having this discussion about what the heck are we going to cover? And we were talking about the DeMarie method.
Yeah. Well, you know that I wanted to try that this year. Unfortunately, my full-size hives didn't make it through the winter, so I wasn't able to do that. But I've read a lot about it, and I know you know it very well. But one of the things I read said, if you're any beekeeper worth his salt, you have to try it at least once.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where I am. I've got to try it at least once.
So the premise of it is it expands the brood nest by manually separating the queen from most of her brood and placing her in the bottom brood chamber with a couple of frames of uncapped brood. I'm reading that. I don't know that because I'm that smart. It says the remainder of the brood is placed higher up in the hive above one or more queen excluders. And again, going back to the Tim Ives conversation, I think it was in January we went to see him or something like that, if you remember.
Yeah.
He talked about the queen excluder, and somebody was just putting the queen in, and every time she made brood, they moved the brood above the queen excluder, and that would just keep having the queen producing, and then they would pull those off and make new hives out of them.
Yeah.
If I remember correct. Do you remember that topic he was talking about?
I do, and just kind of getting the queen to do what you wanted the queen to do, right?
Yeah.
We need to think about trying that this next Saturday when we have our meeting and we go up there, take a look at that that one 3-deep hive that we have and see whether we want to try it. I'd love to give it a shot.
Yeah, I think it would be neat. At minimum, we could just... You know, it's a mentoring hive. We could set the thing up and look and see what the premise is. You know, we don't literally have to do it. We could set the whole thing up and show people how it would work. You know, one of the things that I wanted to bring up on the podcast and just discuss with you when you had a moment, you and I, we were joking the other day about that presentation we gave at North Hunterdon High School where we were in that small classroom, and we went through the swarm prevention techniques, and we shot a video. It's up on the YouTube. It's like 2 hours long. We sat in there and went through all this stuff. Do you remember the conversation you and I had about that, what I had said?
I know. You'd have to remind me.
So we were joking about, we were going through all these techniques that we found on the web, pyramiding up, checkerboarding, this, that, whatever. We're telling all these people, some of them didn't even have bees yet or not, and we started to grow a conscience about let them be. It's like snake oil salesmen, right? We're telling all these crazy things for people to know, but, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, sometimes at the end of the day, you're better off just leaving them alone, right?
Yeah, leave them alone.
What was interesting about that meeting was we had a lot of new beekeepers there, and I thought these are kind of advanced techniques that we were talking about, right?
Yeah.
And I thought that we probably would have lost them, but I got a lot of feedback from the new people there. They found it really, really interesting. Even though they weren't going to be able to do it this year, they just thought it was really interesting, the different manipulations that you could do to try to increase your honey production, or trying to get that, as you say, trying to get the queen to lay as much as she can. So it seemed like folks were interested, even though it might not have been really relevant for them this year.
Well, at minimum, the way I look at it is, if you did none of it, at least you heard a lot of the biology and a lot of the technique and the different things about that you and I covered. And I was thinking to the context of if they tried nothing, but every time they go in their hive, they think about some of the ways that we talked about backfilling the brood and things like that, that they recognize that we spoke. At minimum, they'll at least have the vocabulary for the things that we talked about, you know?
Yeah, and you know, it's all about, as you know, it's all about really understanding what's going on in the hive. And it took me a couple of years to get that through my head. I think, you know, what are the bees trying to do in the spring? Are they trying to build up enough brood that half of them can leave, right? Build up the workforce so half the bees can leave, and build up enough honey so they can take half the honey with them. Seems pretty obvious, and it seems pretty basic, but I don't know, it took me a couple of years to figure it out, you know, and once you do, then you can start these more complex manipulations. If you understand what the bees are trying to do, then you can work with them and do these different manipulations to try to increase your honey production or increase your numbers of bees.
Yeah, so you and I started beekeeping relatively the same time, and the reason I say that is we started in 2008, but it was really Sharon that was doing it. I was a beekeeper's husband, and now she became a beekeeper's wife, right? When we switched in 2009, and yeah. I started doing more of the beekeeping, and that's about the time you came. The question, I guess, is, are we novices anymore? And I have to say, I lost all my bees this year, which was really strange to me. It was like a foreign concept. Given all that I know, should have been smarter. And you and I, we talked about that, the one episode. But I watched a video of myself the other day going through all my hives and looking what I had. And there wasn't a single time. And I remember looking at videos that I've made in the past where I'm holding a frame and I'm going, I don't understand what's going on here. Now I know. I know everything, and I think back to like that first year, the bees overwintered, and the next year that the hive went south, and I couldn't figure out why, and I saw all the bullet comb from the queen who was gone, and they were laying, the workers were laying multiples in a cell and things like that. I saw all that, but I didn't know what it meant.
Yeah.
They were trying to make a queen, and they just couldn't literally do it because they didn't have the right tools and equipment inside the hive. And I was at a loss as to why the hive died. But now I know, right? And I think I've become comfortable at going through the hives, and pretty much everything I see I understand. And that's a really big, I don't know, it's like a milestone as far as I'm concerned. And it's no big deal, but when you watch the video, as I did, of myself recently, I realize that I'm there. I there's not much that surprises me anymore about what I'm looking at on the comb, you know?
Well, it's why we have so many new beekeepers that come to our meetings up at the mentoring hives, because when you first start out, you don't know what you're looking at, and that's what it's all about. And it really helps a lot to have somebody point things out and show things to you so that you understand it. Having said that, when we went into that overwintered hive up at Round Mountain, the mentoring hive, I had never seen anything like that with all that drone brood that was in there mixed in with the capped worker brood.
Yeah.
I mean, you always get thrown a little bit of a curveball. So when you think you know what's going on, you look at one of those and you go, I've never seen anything like this before.
Yeah, you know, that's not to say, and I tell people this all the time, is that beekeeping is one of those hobbies that you can't say been there and done that. I don't think I've ever come across it. So, you know, we've been chatting for a while. Both you and I got to get up early and go to work tomorrow. Anything else you want to hit on here before we go away?
Well, one thing, and maybe we can save this for a future discussion, but we were talking a lot recently, you and I have been talking about the importance of having a good young queen going into the winter. Because I think what we've seen is we've seen hives make it through the first winter and maybe even through the second, but by the third winter, either the varroa gets them or whatever, they just don't seem to last much more than about 3 years. And we've talked a lot recently about how important it is. You have a good, strong queen going into the winter. It makes up for a lot of our failures as beekeepers, right?
Yeah.
So I think maybe that's something we can pick up on the next podcast and talk a little bit about that, the importance of having a good, young, vigorous queen going into the winter.
Yeah, that was a discussion we had recently where every year we want to replace, and we always thought that was kind of like weird. What a weird thing. But, you know, Charlie was talking about how Carly Toth was saying that a new queen doesn't swarm in the spring and some of those other things. It is something that I think of being more and more acclimated to. We should be replacing our queens all the time. I'm this close to saying that as a principle. Now, you and I, we don't like to pinch queens. So we're going to have a dilemma on this.
Yeah, well, you know, it comes back to that. Well, the bees know best. I want to do it as natural as I can. I'll let the bees replace the queen. Well, that's all well and good until you lose your hive over the winter because the queen just wasn't vigorous enough. So anyway, more discussion to come on that one.
Yeah, you know, you remind me of something I read recently. I was overlooking at something from Randy Oliver, and he was talking about animal husbandry and the fact that when you take the bees and you put them into a box, they're not wild anymore. And, you know, they were talking, and there was one by Rusty from Honeybee Suite was an article he referred to. And the premise of this was that all these people who say they're going to go treatment-free and all these other things, you would not buy a dog and say, well, dogs naturally eat in nature through, and nobody feeds them, so I bought a dog, I'm not going to feed it, that kind of thing. It just doesn't make any sense, and that wasn't the literal analogy, but that was an analogy I thought of, and yeah, I know that there are people who are doing treatment-free and they're not feeding and they're getting away with it, or they have figured out something that the rest of us seem to be unable to reproduce for whatever reasons. And I've touched on this in past episodes. I have to follow what Tim is telling us as the state apiarist. You got to feed your bees. You got to treat them. You got to do what the conventional wisdom is. And now, both you and I, maybe we'll get enough bees that we can go the treatment-free route and figure out, well, I know where you are with treatment-free. Look how far we're getting, right? We're trying.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's nice having the mentoring hives, too, because I can always maintain them in a more traditional way, right, because I want to keep them alive for the club. And then I can play around with whatever I have at home. The key to any of it, as you know, Kevin, is having numbers. You need to have enough numbers whether you treat or you don't treat. You know, you can't get by with two hives. If you have two hives, you've got a huge risk of losing both of them. I don't care if you treat or you don't treat. So it's really about numbers. The other thing I would say is, you know, people that say that they don't treat, that's fine. They don't treat with chemicals, but they definitely use other management techniques that help them keep the varroa down, because the varroa is public enemy number one, and you need somehow to do something, some sort of management techniques that's going to keep your varroa to a level that the bees can tolerate.
I mean, I didn't treat last year, but I had done splits on my hives, and I had done other techniques, as you said, that should have let me be treatment free. And quite frankly, I got to the end of the year, and my bees were okay. I was checking them for mites, and yeah. It was the robbing thing that got them. But, you know, after you saw that pile of bees I had when the one hive died, I checked them, and there were mites in there. So until I get a plethora of hives, I think there's mite away quick strips or something in my future.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is, I'm sorry, I just lost my train of thought here.
Treating.
Oh, so we talked about swarming, right? This kind of leads into that. You know, should you let your bees swarm? There's your natural brood cycle break,
yeah.
Right? So I had my top bar, and I went in there. I took some swarm cells out, but I knew it was going to swarm. That's not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, you saw it today. There's still a lot of bees left in that hive.
It was 3/4 full.
Yeah, so maybe, you know, it's just, it gives it that break, and maybe that's, again, it's just one of the management techniques that you use. Of course, treating, and I think, you know, now that we've got Max, I think that makes it a lot easier because you can treat when you've got honey on. You don't have to worry about it. But I think that break in the brood cycle is as effective as anything if you're not going to treat.
There's something. Pay attention now, because this is something I've been
pointing at me.
Swarm. Let your hive swarm. What goes with the swarm?
The old queen.
The queen.
There you go, right?
The queen every year if you let your hive swarm.
Yeah, well, that's for another time, that discussion. But, you know, think about it. A hive has to be really strong to swarm, right? Yeah. It's got to have numbers, and it's got to have honey and pollen. It's got to have everything that it needs. So it's hard to argue with, I had a strong hive, and it was so strong that it swarmed. But
here's a question I have to the opposite of that, right?
Yeah.
Your hive just swarmed, and you have the old antique queen. Why is that good for you? Right? Why is that good?
Well, she's not there.
You have an old queen in your box. Now, mind you, right, one of the conversations I've had in the past with myself on this podcast is that this is the best of everything. This is the future of the beekeeping. You know, when they issue a swarm, they want to start over from scratch. But they send the old queen out, and who knows how long she'll be before she's out of gas, right? So yeah. Isn't that kind of odd that the queen goes with them? Wouldn't you think they'd send a brand new queen when that's to be the case?
Yeah, I guess you might, but think about it. It's risky. How many swarms make it through the winter, right? So it'd be pretty risky to put put all your eggs in that basket. I don't know. Again, lots of good stuff to talk about.
Yes.
You know, and the other thing is, you know, I don't know the answer to this. Maybe you can tell me this. So how often are the queens that go out with a swarm, the old queens, how often are they superseded pretty soon after they swarm? I don't know.
You would think that would be a common case, right? Because now they're reestablishing, she's building new brood, and I guess maybe they're not worried about it. If she's bad, they'll replace her. And the old colony that she left behind is suddenly new. They've got a new queen, they've got all new brood, they've got plenty of stores because it had to be there, so it's in the best shape of its life. But time and time again, if you ask people about the best hives that they have, they started with a swarm. Or more specifically, you'd be better off with a feral colony. But the swarm ones are always some of Charlie's best hives of his 15 were ones that were swarms last year, and they were just hammering this year.
Well, so there's that, and then think about it. in a swarm, you've got a queen that's at least lived through the winter, right? So she's lived through one winter.
Yeah.
There are those who would argue that the queen is at her best in that second year. Kind of goes against what we were saying about requeening every year, but I think there's an awful lot of talk on the internet about how that second year queen is the best, the one who's made it through the winter. That's why folks are wintering nukes, right? Why do people want to buy an overwintered nuke? Because it seems like that second year is really her best, but we can talk about that some other time.
Yeah, let's wrap it up. I will say to you that we both have queens coming in June timeframe, and you're hearing a lot about people who put their queens in after the summer starts, and they become the best queens. You go over winter with them once, and you replace them that following June.
Yeah.
And that seems to be the good cycle for us, I think.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Well, Bob, this has been great. I appreciate you coming in again, and we'll have to just keep having you back and have these conversations. And, folks, yes, it's like this every day. Bob and I talk, two, three times a week sometimes, depending on how many meetings we have coming up and activities. And we're going to the spring meeting. If you're a New Jersey beekeeper, the New Jersey Beekeepers Association spring meeting is coming up. It's being held at the Jersey Cape, and Jersey Cape always puts on a really good meeting. So the agenda came out. It looked really good, Bob, for that.
Yeah, I mean, they always put on a great show. I've never been to one of theirs yet, but you have, but I've seen some of the video on it, and I'm really looking forward to it. Hopefully learn something.
Yeah, and I guess it's funny, I waited till the end to plug this, but the New Jersey Swarm Report is up and running. You logged yours, I logged mine. I think we're at 42 or 43 so far this year. I built a new website, njswarm.com, where you could follow along. One of the things I'm going to get back into is the interactive map. I'm using a WordPress blog, Bob, which you probably don't know what that means, but it's pretty easy to just add posts to it. It's a lot less work from a web administration standpoint, and really happy about that. I've been able to keep things up to date, and I asked people to send in pictures of their swarms, and I got a couple of those posted up there. And you know what? You gave me your swarm video stuff, so I'll have to put some of that up there too.
Yeah. So I was looking for the map today, Kevin. I wanted to see where it was, so better get that up there pretty quickly. I want to see it.
I literally went and entered every address into a Google Map plugin, and there's one up there if you look at the links, but it's not as good as that other one. I think what I'm going to do is dump the data out of the Swarm Report into the Batch Geo one that I used last year, and then just create a link to it from the website and do it that way for now, until I figure out how to embed it, because that one showed you the swarms and you could click on the weeks as it went through, and each week it would show you where they were. And but right now, the ones that I saw, you know, you and I talked about the cold weather, and the first week that it got hot, boom, there were swarms everywhere, all of New Jersey. It wasn't one central place.
Yeah, it's not like you saw it move up from the south and then into the central and then into the north. It just, bang, hit all at once.
Yeah, one weekend they were all busting. And So. All right, that's it. Hey, everybody, thanks for listening to another edition of the Beekeeper's Corner podcast. On this one, you can watch the video if you go to NWNJBA, the channel on YouTube. It is youtube.com/NWNJBA. You can find our show notes at bkcorner.org. Probably move that to a WordPress blog at some point and make it a little bit easier for me. You can send any messages you have, questions, comments. I've been getting back to my emails lately, even going back to some of the older ones. So thank you, everybody, for hanging in there with me. Kevin@bkcorner.org. And Bob, this episode was called Two Steps Forward, One Step Back, and I feel like with all new hives outside, and I know you got your nukes going through your nuke program. We've come forward, we've come back, but we're really moving forward still.
Yeah. One last comment, Kevin.
Yep.
I'm still pissed at you for shaving.
That's funny. And on audio, it doesn't do justice, but what I said to Bob was, I lived a bachelor life this weekend, and Sharon and Brian were off at the New Jersey State Police Academy for a Boy Scout Jamboree all weekend. And I was by myself, and I hadn't shaved, and I was getting ready for this conversation and looked at myself and said, wow, I look pretty grubby. I better shave. Sorry, Bob. I'll give you better notice next time.
Yeah, thanks. Well, and now we have to do it during the week because I don't shave on the weekend. So.
Yeah.
All right.
With that, we'll end it. So, thanks, everybody, for watching and for listening. We'll catch you next time on the Beekeeper's Corner podcast.
All right. See you, Kevin.